And we'll start with the last sentence of the first paragraph, this wondrous Dharma. This wondrous Dharma, which has been transmitted only from Buddha to Buddha without deviation, has as its criterion Jijuyu Sanmai. Yay, okay. So, Dogen and poetry. It occurred to me on Sunday as I was trying to explain Dogen, one woman came to me afterwards and said she just couldn't get into it. She couldn't, she started to read it and she couldn't figure it out. One way of talking to somebody about it might be to say that it's poetic. I don't know if that's useful or not, but at any rate, today we're going to talk about his poetry, but what Pat was doing a lot was also talking about his life and weaving the poetry into it. So that was, I thought that was pretty interesting.
The six realms. I recognize my father. Is my mother. Such a profound and soulful way to recall one's primary family, as if they've always been with him as he moves through his life, while trekking through the struggles of his life, all the way to his own death. Listen for how it contains both the wisdom of the Buddhist teachings of life and death, but also holds a deep feeling of surprise, of memory, of loss. My companions trekking the six realms, I recognize my father. There is my mother. Just to pause for a moment and think of our own lives. And that of our own fathers and mothers, and recognize that we also can recognize that they are truly our companions as we move through the different realms every day. We don't need a modern psychologist to tell us that. Dogen is offering this insight just in these few lines of this poem. We shift and encounter the different aspects of the realms, the godly realm, the saintly realm, the human realm, and the realms of the animals, the hungry ghosts, and the hell realms. And our mother and father are here with us. This is what the teaching of this short poem that Dogen offers us. If we can look carefully at it. When we feel on top of things, when we feel angry, sad, when we suffer, when we simply feel human, at all those times, it's an opportunity to realize our own mother and father in us as they shifted through their lives. My companions, trekking the six realms, I recognize my father. I recognize my mother. 3 and 7. You know, in Stephen's book that we're celebrating today, and as he did do today, really early life, and he reminded us that Dogen comes from Japanese aristocracy, the nobility. Highly educated elite, who at the time main work was engaging in poetry and literature as a way of life. His father and grandfather were renowned waka poets and influential in the formation of waka poetry collections. It was the air that he breathed, the sounds that he heard, and the images that he viewed. So it may sound surprising, but it's not unusual to find that at the age of 3, think of some kids, you know, at the age of 3, Dogen, precocious Dogen, learned to recite celebrated 12th century Chinese woman poet Li Qingzhao, whose poetry today, by the way, is still highly regarded. Her poems were often sung to popular tunes, but we can just imagine young Dogen, age 3, at his mother's knee, singing along in Chinese to the acclaimed poet's verses. Let me read a poem of hers, Li Qingzhao's, which I imagine might have been one of the poems that Dogen learned to recite from memory as a 3-year-old. It's called Banana Trees. Who planted the banana trees in front of my window, filling the courtyard with shadows, each leaf a heart brimming over with love as it closes or unfolds. Patter of midnight rain on the leaves, haunting the pillow, dripping ceaselessly, ceaselessly. Dismal sounds, painful memories. An outcast from the north in the throes of sorrow cannot bear to sit up and listen. I mean, Dogen was reciting in a singing fashion such a poem. Point that I want to make is that here he was at 3 reciting poems that had internal rhythm, had structure, political and cultural allusions to war and to sorrow. Li Qingzhao was always very sad in her poems. I went through a lot of them to try to find one that would, where she doesn't have a glass of wine in her hand. And imagine, and we're talking about Dogen at 3. But also, it's not just that he was, you know, that education, but the influence of using language to express the obscure and the difficult and the melancholy. This Chinese poet had been cast out of her home, lost her mate, and was in hiding from the Tatar invasion. Young Dogen learned Chinese poetry in such a way. Now, Ishi, Dogen's mother, encouraged her son to read Chinese classics, Confucian and Taoist texts. And at her deathbed in 1207, when Dogen was just 7, she encouraged him to join the monkhood when he was old enough. So your mother's dying and she tells you, become a monk. We can just imagine Dogen standing at his mother's funeral, watching the incense float away, bearing witness in his own heart to loss yet again. Many years later, Dogen composed a waka, a poem that for me speaks to how each one of us contemplates the death of our loved ones. He wrote, "Even in sentient beings such as grasses and trees wither today. Seeing this in front of our eyes, how can we not grieve? Even in sentient beings such as grasses and trees wither today. Seeing this in front of our eyes, how can we not grieve?" Now, this translation from Shohaku Okamura reminds us that everything dies. Grasses and trees, you and me, our loved ones, and all manner of life. And Dogen tells us we can grieve. We can feel the loss, the sorrow of death that comes to everyone and everything that we know. This is not some austere or ascetic spirituality. It's an intimate realization of life and death. How we as beings experience that truth. How can we not grieve? You know, many years later, when Dogen was facing his own aging, he wrote this poem that was translated by Stephen. It's entitled, "Not a Moment Spent Idly in the 24 Hours." Over 40 years so quickly passed, day and night following the path of the sun and the moon, which, like the hare and the crow, swiftly travels in the heavens. Not a moment spent idly in the 24 hours. Over 40 years so quickly passed, day and night following the path of the sun and the moon, which, like the hare and the crow, swiftly travel in the heavens. Perhaps some of you can share that realization. Oh, so quickly passed. And we can also recognize that not a moment of our lives have in fact been wasted or been spent idly. Every second, we continue to follow through the space-time continuum. We can ourselves recognize each moment of our life as an aspect of our being. It's as if Dogen quietly takes us by the hand and reminds us that time is passing by and this very life is it. Is our opportunity to live with grace and compassion, being the time itself. Being the time itself. So after his mother's death, Dogen lived in high cultural climate in the capital in Kyoto. And he was considered a fine candidate for a political career in the court. He was smart. He could write, he could speak beautifully, but he was mindful of his mother's wish that he become a monk. And at 12 years old, think of someone you know who's 12 years old. And at 12 years old, he found a way to escape the court of Kyoto. And he ran away to a relative's Tendai temple and then was taken to the Tendai center at Mount Hiei. And it was there, at such a young age, he ordained as a monk. He later wrote this poem in Stephen's translation. What can I accomplish? Although not yet a Buddha, let my priest's body be a raft to carry sentient beings to the yonder shore. What can I accomplish? Although not yet a Buddha, let my priest's body be a raft to carry sentient beings to the yonder shore. You know, such a question for each of us, no matter where we are in our life story. What can I accomplish? And such humility. So for all of us, no matter what our circumstances, our understanding of our ability to serve, we have to recognize that what he's saying, that in our very presence in this life, we can serve by virtue of our very presence as a part of the whole. We can serve. And sometimes we may not even know we're serving, but we are serving, particularly if we have found the Buddha path. By our daily actions, alone or with others, by the breath that we take in and the thoughts and prayers that we offer out, we have the opportunity to embody and perform the raft, carrying others to the side of insight and the blessing of Buddha nature. I love this image of the raft. Of course, it's an old Buddhist trope. But for me, it conjures such a humble and simple, rustic image of the self that can serve others without any fancy extras. And it may be part of Dovin's incentive to us, something to give us courage to recognize our capability to simply allow ourselves to be a raft for whomever or whatever we encounter. Simply to allow transformation and service to arise in us. You know, as a teenager, Dogen witnessed the other monks at Mount Tendai, who were many of whom were also teenagers. And at that time, there were many different factions operating there. And there was considerable debate and friction over ritual, tradition, and the new traditions that were flowing into Japan, such as Pure Land and Nichiren, that were flowing in at that time. Moreover, there was this prevailing doctrine at Tendai of original enlightenment, Hongaku. And it held that all beings, all of us, are already enlightened, and we just need to realize it. And, you know, it's a subtle argument that can be so easily misinterpreted and misused. And Dogen clearly saw the flaws in the argument and its application, particularly at Mount Tendai. Essentially, if we're already empowered with enlightenment, why practice? Why follow any rules? And Stephen tells us in his biography of Dogen that it was there that Dogen really encountered his great doubt and decided to leave, to escape, to run away from the Tendai monastery and that tradition, and to go to Kyoto and find a place in the emerging Rinzai Zen temple at Kaninji and to study with Isai. You know, I think this doubt is so important, and I think it continues in Dogen's life. I wasn't able to find a specific poem that mentioned doubt, but there's a fine poetic section in the chapter Uji, Being Time, in a translation by Kaz-sensei, that evokes this powerful aspect of mind and of Dogen's mind, I would say, at that time when he left Mount Tendai. It reads like a poem. I laid it out on my page like a poem. Because the signs of time's coming and going are obvious, people do not doubt it. Although they do not doubt it, they do not understand it. Or when sentient beings doubt what they do not understand, their doubt is not firmly fixed. Because of that, their past doubts do not necessarily coincide with the present doubt. Yet doubt itself is nothing but time. I just want to read a couple of lines from that again. People do not doubt it. Although they do not doubt it, they do not understand it. Or when sentient beings doubt what they do not understand, their doubt is not firmly fixed. Because of that, their past doubts do not necessarily coincide with the present doubt. Yet doubt itself is nothing but time. It was as though the great doubt that Dogen found himself in a tradition that no longer would hold him for the rest of his life. Zen, as it was known at that time, was rippling into Japan. Just at that time, you know, it's so amazing, you know, just then. Thanks to Isai, who brought the Rinzai teachings to Kyoto. And although Isan died pretty soon after Dogen went to Kyoto, Dogen was able to study with his student, Isai's student, Myozen, Isai's successor. And after several years, Dogen accompanied Myozen to China to find the source of Zen, to find the source of what Isai had brought 20 years before. I imagine you'll probably hear a lot or read a lot about Dogen's seminal voyage to China with Miozen, the deep impact it had on his life, on his influence in Japan, and I would say even us today are affected by Dogen's 5 years in Japan, in China. Stephen quotes a poem that Dogen wrote in China that may speak to you as it does to me. Each time I check myself, where I am, what I'm doing with my life. Here is the poem. Treading along in the dreamlike illusory realm, without looking for the traces I may have left, a cuckoo's song beckons me to return home. Hearing this, I tilt my head to see who has told me to turn back. But do not ask me where I'm going as I travel this limitless world, where every step I take is my home. So first he evokes this illusory realm without looking for the traces, just moving forward. And he hears sounds that remind him of home. But don't ask me where I'm going, he says, as I travel this limitless world, where every step I take is my home. Were we to recognize that, how different our lives would be. Always reaching out for something else, somewhere else, a new idea, a new place. Every step we go, every thought we have is our home in that moment. You just imagine Dogen in a strange culture. He was a young man, probably still just in his late teens. Everything unfamiliar when we travel. And he's wondering if he's on the right path. He left his home country, where he was part of the elite, where he was studying at a prestigious temple. And now he's wandering from temple to temple with a wooden backpack. Did you see that wooden backpack that Stephen showed us? Every time I look at that, it's like, wow. You know, how he had to have his eating implements in there, his robes. The traces I may have left, he says, right here, this footstep is home. And in effect, that's what Dogen realized when he finally met his Chinese teacher, Ru Xing. You'll hear about that later today, I'm sure. But I want to highlight the poem that Dogen attributes to Ru Xing in an early chapter of the Shobogenzo, the manifestation of great prajna, the Makamanya Paramitsu. And this is in Kaz-sensei's translation, how Dogen offers us Ru Xing's teaching. The entire body is a mouth, a wind bell, hanging in space. Regardless of the wind from the east, west, south, or north, joining the whole universe in chiming out prajna, tingling, tingling, tingling. Entire body is a mouth, a wind bell hanging in space. Regardless of the wind from the east, the west, the south, or north, joining the whole universe in chiming out prajna, tingling, tingling, tingling. Imagine yourself right now, who you are, as simply a bell being run by the wind of the universe. Ding, ding. Not so easy to let go of ego, I suppose, but if you can practice that maybe sometime, to be the bell, as Dogen understood from Ru Xing, what that means. What would that mean to you? That prajna, that wisdom. So, you know, after his study with Ru Xing, Dogen returned to Japan, to Kyoto, where he'd come from, First, he spent time at Kinenji, the same temple that he had been studying at with Isai and then Myosin. And then he moved to his own temple on the outskirts of Kyoto, Koshoji. I mean, it really was still, if you look at the map that Stephen provides, it was really in Kyoto. And Dogen was now in his late 20s, having left his extended family in aristocratic Kyoto at 13, having studied at Mount Tendai, where he was ordained. And not long after that, filled with doubt, having escaped, and apparently that was kind of a big deal, that it wasn't, he had to be hidden in a place in a relative's temple for a few days before he could go to Kyoto and study with Myosin, who died not long, Isai, who died not long after, and then studied with Myosin at Kinenji. 5 years in China. This young man, now back in Kyoto and ready to offer teachings of what he had absorbed, to share what he had learned. And that was the most, one of the most productive times or in Dogen's writings. And in particular, I want to highlight Genjo Koan, said to have been written for a layman. So he was still on the outskirts of the city, you see, and he was meeting people coming and going. And I think for many of us today, Genjo Koan speaks to our daily lives. It's certainly a text that I give a new student walking in to our temple. Read Genjo Koan. Really take in what Genjo Koan has to say. I could quote almost any line in Genjo Koan as poetry. But how about this one? Enlightenment is like the moon reflected on the water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water broken. Although its light is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch wide. The whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in dewdrops on the grass, or even one drop of water. In that simple, simple three lines, we are assured that our practice gives rise to traces of insight, of service, of interconnection with everything that arises around us. If we can but notice it, we can but see it. And you know, for me, practicing in a city where I had to close my windows, and practicing Zen, I often feel a deep resonance with Dogen's writings while he was in Kyoto. He was still living in a busy city. Well, if you could call 13th century Kyoto a busy city, I don't know. But certainly, in some way, it was. Here's a poem translated by Stephen, thought to have been written just at that time. It is part of a set on the Lotus Sutra. And here's what he wrote. Attaining the heart of the sutra are not even the sounds of the bustling marketplace, the preaching of the Dharma. Attaining the heart of the sutra are not even the sounds of the bustling marketplace, the preaching of the Dharma. In this poem, you know, Dogen is gently placing at the heart, at the center of the Lotus message, that's within our ordinary lives, in the midst of the actual lives that we live, in the midst of the bustling marketplace. For many who live here around me, my own community, we're all dedicated city dwellers. And the poem reminds us that the heart of the teachings are always available if our hearts and our minds are aware, if we can see it, no matter where we are. So after 10 years at Koshoji on the outskirts of Kyoto, Dogen left, and there's all kinds of ideas of why he left. Maybe it was a simple politics in the town, and he found someone who would help fund a place for him. He left and to found Ehiji Monastery in the remote mountainous regions. And for the remainder of his life, Dogen devoted himself to monastic practice, teaching and writing. Many of his most renowned chapters and lectures are from that period. And he continued to write poems. He never stopped writing poems. Here's a short poem from that period. And this poem, I think, is might be the most important poem for me. I encountered it very early when I was just beginning to be curious about Zen. And it was, I encountered Kaz-sensei's translation of a Dogen poem. And this verse has continued to support me through the years, as I imagine it did Dogen after moving to the country. All my life, false and real, right and wrong, entangled. Playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, listening to birds. Many years wasted seeing the mountain covered in snow. This winter, I realize snow makes a mountain. All my life, false and real, right and wrong, entangled. Playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, listening to birds. Many years wasted seeing the mountain covered in snow. This winter, I realized snow makes a mountain. When we're able to fully see ourselves, to integrate all the parts, fully embody what happens to us, what we show up for, fully embody who we are. It is then, it's like realizing snow makes a mountain. We are exactly here now. What happens to us, what we do, just this. So once having established a Ehiji Monastery, Dogen continued to write, you know, I think many of you are familiar with his brilliant discourses, essays, and poetry. Reading his writings at that time, I feel a kind of creative resolution going on, a kind of that he was finally home. Here's a verse translated by Kaz that alludes to that. It's called Mountain Seclusion. I won't even stop at the valley's brook for fear that my shadow may flow into the world. I won't even stop at the valley's brook for fear that my shadow may flow into the world. Earlier, we were talking about complete integration, oneness, and manyness. The water is flowing. The willingness to serve. The willingness to be a part of a whole. In five lines. What an amazing poet. After settling into Ehiji, Dogen took only one journey until his final one to Kyoto. He'd been asked again and again to go to Kamakura and offer teachings to the shogun. And we must imagine how strange it must have been for him to leave the monastery and go to the court life in Kamakura at that time. He was there for half a year. And during that time, he wrote some poems for the shogun's wife. Here's one that's translated by Stephen that I think speaks to all of us today in our troubled world. It's called Everyday Life. Walking, standing, sitting, sleeping. Not seeming to protect the paddy field, scarecrow standing on the hillside, by no means useless. Not seeming to protect the paddy field, scarecrow standing on the hillside, by no means useless. He may have written that for a noble woman who may have felt useless. And who knows, perhaps even sometimes Dogen himself might have felt that way. Isolated from Kyoto and the main business of Buddhism in Japan. But his poem says his everyday life, and that's the title, Everyday Life, and our everyday life is by no means useless. So finally, after his return to Eiji, and then a few years later, Dogen felt quite ill, and it was decided he should go to Kyoto for medical treatment. So imagine in those times being ill, journeying through the mountains back towards his home, where he was born, where he had lost family, where he had studied, where he had found Zen, and where he began to teach. And during that last journey, he wrote these two poems, translated by Stephen. Like a blade of grass, my frail body treading the path to Kyoto, seeming to wander amid the cloudy mist of Kenobi Pass. And then another one. Just when my longing to see the moon over Kyoto one last time grows deepest, the image I behold this autumn night leaves me sleepless for its beauty, still able to appreciate the moment at the end of his life, still alive to imagery. The frail body, the blade of grass kind of echoing back the fact that, there's an ancient story about Shakyamuni putting a blade of grass in the ground. The clouds and the mist, all symbols of practice and insight. His life of awakening and service. And he did finally write a death poem, as is the custom for many of us Buddhists to write a death poem before we die. And here it is, again with a translation by Stephen. For 54 years following the way of heaven, now leaping beyond, shattering every barrier, amazing to cast off all attachments while still alive, plunging into the yellow springs. For 54 years following the way of heaven, now leaping beyond, shattering every barrier, amazing to cast off all attachments while still alive, plunging into the yellow springs. Dogen continues to shatter barriers, offer teachings to us today. Many of you signed up for this, to share our gratitude for this being who lived some 800 years ago. Through his poetry, through his use of language and words that continue to teach us, like the scarecrow in the poem, like the moon in the poem, the flow of the mountain brook, the snow, the blossom, leaping in through the final barrier. Thank you, dear Master Dogen, for your teachings. And thank you to the translators and scholars who bring the teachings to us, Stephen and Kaz. And Joan Roshi, thank you so much. Let me offer this modest verse. Thank you, Master Poet Dogen, for image, color, light, for your heart, your mind, your skill to show the way. And thank you all who bring us such treasures.
Oh, thank you, Roshi. Thank you.
So I think that's probably enough, rather than our getting into these other poems tonight. But how was that? What did you think of that?
She's a wonderful presenter. She just reads them as she's speaking. Feel her heart.
Yeah, I like her very much. She's very down to earth.
She really brings up.
I listened to the whole thing.
Liam, I think you did start a split second before Zach. I'm not sure.
Didn't raise my hand. I was just saying that it's just the way she brings the poems to life is just so wonderful. I've seen this several times now, and I just still am taken by it every time.
It's just as wonderful listening this a few hours later. And as she's reciting the poems, I'm going, oh, that's my favorite one. Oh, wait, no, that's my favorite one. They're so good, and she just made them come to life. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Anybody else? Just go ahead and speak. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of agree with everyone. I had listened to part of it, but I hadn't listened to the whole thing, and so it was nice to hear it again. And like Zach, I was thinking, oh yeah, that's my favorite, and then there'd come another one, and it's really special when someone can. She has such a deep understanding of his life and where these came from. I mean, it was nice that she put them in context of where he was at the time that he wrote them, and that really filled things out for me.
Yeah, you're feeling like she supports you to get to know him better. And I must say, I want to read the new biography, but I haven't gotten it yet.
That's what she was reading from.
She was that she held it up at the beginning and showed it. And Stephen Hine is another one of the presenters on this. And so she said she learned a lot. She said that's one of the books she showed that had all the sticky notes in it.
I'll just say one more personal thing about that. One of the poems, one of my favorite poems that she read was the one where she was talking about your grieving and your mother and your father standing on either shoulder. And I just got back from a trip to Indiana and a reunion with a couple of cousins at Notre Dame, which is where my father went to school and my brother went to school and my cousin went to school. I spent some time there as a kid. It was a very important place for our family. And I hadn't been back in probably 30 years, maybe 40 years. And that really resonates for me that I felt them there. You know, we went to the pool where my brother swim meets. And, you know, I saw, you know, he broke a record at that pool and they have the names up there. And anyway, that's all.
Asha, was that meaning to talk or saying thank you to Kate? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Whispering to Kelly.
It's a really good microphone.
I want to just share with you Ru Jing's death poem because it's Dogen's is patterned after his. The Yellow Springs is death. It's another. Oh, by the way, just in case, she talks about the hare and the raven in the sky. In Asia, they see a hare or a rabbit in the moon. We see the old man or green cheese or whatever. So that's a reference to the moon. Anyway, so these are causeless translations. Ru Jing's death poem, for 63 years committing terrible sins against heaven, now leaping beyond while still alive, plunging into the Yellow Springs. Amazing. I used to believe that life and death were unrelated.
Well, very similar.
Yes, yeah. And Dogen's, this is causes, this translation is a little different. Dogen's, 54 years lighting up the sky, a quivering leap smashes a billion worlds. Ha! Entire body looks for nothing. Living, I plunge into Yellow Springs. It's very different from Stephen's translation, but
yeah.
Anyway, but there you can see the parallels. It sounds like Ru Jing had a sense of humor. Amazing. I used to think life and death were unrelated.
What a sucker I was.
Yes. So there's one is next week we can do the poems, but I also, I want to ask people, What you the movie Zen is about 2 hours long, I believe. And so do you want to watch it together for the class? And you're welcome to eat dinner or have a cup of tea or whatever, eat popcorn or whatever while you watch it. But do you want to do that, or do you want to watch it on your own? Because it's on YouTube. But it would be easy to share this screen on YouTube. But at any rate, what's your preference? Because it would be 2 hours long. So even if we just, you know, ended Zazen at 6, you know, it would be at least 8 o'clock before it was over.
I far prefer to watch it on my own and discuss
tell
it.
Tell them, tell everybody.
Well, they can hear you whispering.
Oh, that's
yeah, I'd far rather watch it on my own than take up the time here.
I vote the same.
Me too.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, that way we have time to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do this. Watch it on your... Because I do want to do the thing with the poems. But, you know, choose one. You can choose one of the ones that she wrote or one of the ones from this handout. Let's do the movie, shall we, for next week? Because we can always
yeah.
poems. Okay, so watch it. It's I think that Zach sent out a link, but if you just go to YouTube and search for it, it'll show up.
Yeah,
I think I sent the link to you, Mary, but I can send it to everyone. Should I send it to everyone here or to the big group?
Send it to the big group. I don't know who's, I have just been sending it to the big group because, you know, okay. Lisa shows up sometimes and you just never know who's sort of following along. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't hurt to watch it as long as they, you know, there's some minor things like, you know, he did not die at the temple. He died in Kyoto. And, the story about the sending the woman around who has baby died, sending the woman around to find a house where there wasn't any death. That's a Jataka tale. That's a Buddha story, not a Dogen story. And I don't think he, well, never mind. You'll find it, but it is a lot true, I think. And I just notice Ajo is a man who was his first disciple. And who came to, you know, tried to join him, and Dogen said, it's not the right time because you're the head of the Daruma Society or whatever it was, or school, and it's not the right time, and sent him away. And then later, as he's marching off to Eheji, Ajo sort of comes out of the woods with a bunch of people, a bunch of men, and that's when they join. So that's, and Ajo is the one who is supposed to have written down all of these lectures and stuff. And then Tetsu Gikai is the one who he would not transmit to whom he wouldn't transmit. Sorry, Mom. And and because he said he didn't have grandmotherly mind yet. And Tetsu Gikai is the one who tells the kid that's working in the kitchen and is worried about kind of falling behind because he doesn't have enough time to sit. And Ajo tells him, well, why don't you just sit all night? Cut your finger off when you're working. I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting to know this stuff. And I think it's pretty much, it's a lot accurate, including the debauchery of some of the monks in Kyoto when he was younger, and the violence. This is quite a movie. It's a very dramatic movie.
Which maybe explains why when he wrote rules for the monastery later, they were so strict.
Yeah. That, and then he had a lot of adolescent boys.
Yeah, he was like, I need to keep you from dying.
Right. Well, I met the guy who was the Soto Zen advisor on that movie, has given some talks at when the Japanese related Zen people get together in LA, and he's given some talks, and I've asked him about it, and he just said, yeah, it's actually probably pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. that came and burned down the temple and stuff like that. And Enkyo referred to that. She didn't go into it, but she said there were difficulties. And so, anyhow, so let's see. Oh, okay, so the closing is the two sentences. No. Anyway, the first three sentences. Two sentences. Although it is not, I thought we did that, no? Does anybody remember? I know, I think it was this one.
Okay.
Partly because I love saying disporting. Okay, yeah. The first two sentences of the second paragraph, for disporting oneself freely. Okay. For disporting oneself freely in this samadhi, practicing zazen in upright posture is the true gate. Although this dharma is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifest without practice. It is not attained without realization.